Marketing is about value. This is a very complicated world. It's a very noisy world. And we're not going to get a chance to get people to remember much about us. No company is. And so we have to be really clear on what we want them to know about us.
For those listening, running Facebook ads or using Ads Manager, they will know the scariest box that you don't want to tick is that box that says, are you selling one of these, are you one of these special products? How do they call it? Is it like the special products or the special industry box? Or,
industries, or, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. And you do, like, if you have to tick that box, you can say bye-bye to your reach and results.
Yeah, there's some interesting ones in there for like social policies. I think a lot of this come off the back of the whole Cambridge Analytica stuff, but there's like, are you advertising social things to do with like social policies, I think is how they word it, social issues. And you could say that a charity like falls into social issues, but whenever I'm doing like non-profit stuff, I'm like, oh, do I want to tick that box? Because I don't know, as you say, you never know what the platform's going to do to you, because there's certain industries that aren't necessarily banned, but they're kind of frowned upon. So I used to work very briefly at an agency where we would do, one of the services we did was audits on disapproved or like blocked Facebook ads accounts. And we would basically, we couldn't do anything to fix that, but we would go into it and we'd say, you know, we run our audit and like for this reason, these are all things that you did that like contravened the rules, the Meta rules, because it sounds obvious, but a lot of them are, it's a super gray area, so it's difficult to actually know what you did wrong. And a big one was astrology like products, which sounds kind of weird, but I think especially in the rest of Europe, that kind of stuff is quite big, because we had a lot of clients from like Italy and Spain who would they'd be like, oh, my account's been banned, and there wasn't really any reason other than the fact that it was astrology. And I think it kind of makes sense, right? Because if you're telling someone, you know, give me a tenner and I'll tell you your fortune or your future, that's that's bullshit at the end of the day, isn't it? Unfortunately.
So yeah, astrology is an interesting one, because it's probably, from an organic point of view, tapping into astrology is probably the most one of the thing that works the most. There's so many accounts and like meme accounts or just content in general about, you know, going into like a specific season, like I don't know, like Taurus season, like gathering communities around like which signs you are, and very interesting. And there's probably, not that I know of any, but there's probably a lot of apps making a shit ton of money off of horoscopes, and
yeah,
I think it can be very clever with that, and as a like paid app to get your daily horoscope. There's so many people, you know, believing in that stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Me included. I love reading it. So it's always, I can always relate. For some reason, I always relate to one of the things they say. I'm like,
that's because it's good copywriting, isn't it? It's very good copywriting. I remember when I first got to New York, first time I ever went there, I went to a bar with some friends, and there was this guy, and he was doing like tarot card reading and in the garden. He's like, pay a couple of dollars and he'll read your tarot cards. That's pretty cool. I'll go and do that. And I was listening to all the stuff he was saying. I was like, oh shit, this guy is like, nailed me. He's got it like so right. And one of the things was like, you know, you've kind of off the back of a long journey. And I was like, shit, yeah, I've just arrived in the States like literally a few hours ago. How does he know this stuff? And I went back to the people I was with and I was telling them, they were like, yeah, he probably just listened to your accent. He was like, I can assume that at some point he's probably done a fucking Atlantic trip from the UK to the States. And I was like, yeah, okay, fair enough. But in the moment, you're like, you want it to be true, especially if you paid for it. So you like find reason for it to be true. But the business I was just telling you about that we did the Facebook audit for, it was even more dodgy. They were doing like, it wasn't an app or a website. It was like an SMS. It was basically like a squeeze page for an SMS registration. So you like sign up and it's like £5 a day for them to text SMS you every day with your horoscope. So, you know, fuck that. Obviously that is not going to be a business anybody wants to be caught up with.
Did you ever work in gambling or for gambling client. I never did, but
didn't you? Lucky. Yeah, I did tons actually. I ended up being, because at Glow we had in super early days, there's way more restrictions now, but back then there wasn't that many restrictions on gambling clients, especially in the UK and Europe. And we started with Betfair, I think, and we did tons of work with Betfair, lots of case studies about being hyper specific with creative. You know what a sales team's like, as soon as you do something well, they just go out and they get you like another 400 clients all in that same niche. And they're like, oh, Jake's our expert in gambling performance media. And it was very, very difficult to get that stuff to work, especially when you go the routes of like casinos and things. And that was tough. Yeah, but I did run the first, when New Jersey legalized online gambling, I think it was online casino, because it was illegal in the States for a long time, but New Jersey was the first state that opened up and legalized it. For Betfair, we ran one of the first campaigns after it was legalized to like get people into Betfair Casino, which is pretty cool. So that's quite fun.
Yeah, super, super cool. Not cool for gambling, but interesting story. I was the performance back then for that.
Really good. Yeah, that's so good. It's those crazy. I remember in those days you need to sit down to do your report. You couldn't see your attribution numbers as well as you can now in Facebook. Now there's even more restrictions, but back then you just saw there was like 10 conversions, but you had no idea what they were for. So you'd have to export them into Excel and pivot on a specific value that you couldn't do in the UI. It was only then when you saw like, oh shit, those conversions were just like signups. But then every week it would be like drum roll and you'd like hit that button on the pivot table and be like, yes, we got like 10 fucking funded accounts. And that was the only way that you would know. But yeah, it seemed to work amazing. You know what it's like back then, everything fucking worked. Whatever ad you ran, it worked.
Yeah.
This will be our 17th episode where we talk to leaders and just general interesting people doing cool stuff in the world of growth and marketing and startups and product. So we're going to have a good chat today with Aaron, and he is interesting because he's recently launched, I mean, he's done tons of interesting stuff, but he's recently launched a direct to consumer drinks brand called Breeze. It's in the States and it is a THC infused beverage. So rather than having a beer and getting drunk, you can have a breeze and, you know, get a little bit high. Yeah. Also, what's interesting about Aaron is that he has an agency called Lucid Media, and they specialize in marketing and predominantly like paid social and digital marketing for THC, CBD and psychedelic brands. So it's going to be interesting. As last week we spoke to Lewis about the difficulties in like the sex toy industry or the adult industries of advertising. But you know, Aaron has found a way to scale a product that is THC infused, which is completely against terms of service for like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, everything. And scale it through ads. Yeah. So
should be a very insightful discussion on a world that, like you said, we don't know much about over here in England or Europe.
Right, sweet. Cool, Aaron, thank you for jumping on. Whereabouts in the world are you right now?
Dude, I'm in Amsterdam, actually, of all places. So you can kind of see the little dollhouse.
Nice.
But dude, this is one of my favorite places in the world. So I live in Florida most of the time, but I would really like to spend my summers here. I just feel at home every time I come here. And it's also like a very good like cannabis and psychedelic thing to do.
Yes,
like,
it's in your field.
Yeah. It can be a business trip.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
That's great. So should we just jump in with like a quick overview of kind of you? And we got a few things here that we want to kind of dig into with you. But for people that don't know you, maybe just give us like the elevator pitch.
Yeah, man. Cool. So my name's Aaron Oswich. I've been in e-commerce since I was 13 years old. I started in MySpace and Big Cartel. So like old school stuff. Back then we called it endorsements, not in sponsorships, not influencer marketing. And you know, back then we called it B2B, B2C. We didn't call it D2C. Yeah. So ages me, I guess. So that's where I got my start, but I really cut my teeth with a brand called Monk. We were the first portable aromatherapy diffuser. We took the nicotine and tobacco out of a vaporizer, added essential oils to it, made 7 different blends that let you feel your way you want through these portable aromatherapy diffusers. I tried to advertise it. I got shut down every which way. I wrote a letter to Zuckerberg and was like, this is not an e-cigarette. This is not a vaporizer. This is a portable aromatherapy diffuser that uses vaporizer technology, and you need to let us advertise. I go, this is innovation. And if you don't see that, you've forgotten what innovation is. And he did not reply. But the next day, my ad account was unlocked and we became the first non-vaporizer ever to advertise on the platform. Wow. I know, it's crazy. Wow.
So it did work.
In a way, it worked. Somehow, someone saw it. That gave us, we from that point, we scaled to $15 million a year in about 3 years. And it was top 50 fastest growing companies in America a couple years in a row. So it was quite the journey. So I thought I co-owned it. I didn't. I got a rude awakening. That was my first big kick in the teeth. Didn't know how to dot my I's and cross my T's. But long story short, after a few startups, I started a agency called Lucid, which was a cannabis or CBD and hemp advertising agency. We became the first people to compliantly advertise CBD and hemp on Facebook and Instagram, as well as others. And then shortly thereafter, or about 4 years after, we built that into the largest cannabis social advertising company in the world. Now I've jumped over to Breeze, which is a next gen microdose infused, which is infused with cannabis and mushrooms, beverage, ready to drink beverage. And it uses hemp for the THC, which makes it federally legal in America. And then the mushroom aspect is lion's mane, which is a very studied federally legal compound. So there's a long-winded. Wow.
Who I am. No, that's good. So that's like sci-fi for us, right? Being able to do that. But the so with Breeze, you get the high, right? Like you would do if you were smoking.
So I wouldn't say it's like a high like you're familiar with. Like if I go outside and I go get a joint at the coffee shop here in Amsterdam and I start smoking that, or if I go eat a space cake or an edible or a gummy, whatever, that's actually different highs. The THC from the cannabis is like a big shoot up and then you fall down quickly. So it's usually really out of your mind. That's where people get really blasted off from of a joint. I think that's more of a pleasant experience for most, but it involves smoking, which is not a very pleasant thing. Edibles, which is more of much heavier. When you eat an edible, it turns into another compound called 11-hydroxy in your belly, and that turns into, through your liver. And that's like a very heavy, sedated kind of body buzz that a lot of people don't like. It makes them feel a little detached from themselves or you can lead to panic attacks. And so I don't think it's a bad thing. It's but for new beginners, it can be a very overwhelming experience if they don't dose properly. There's not a lot of great information out there. So Breeze itself, Breeze is microdosed, meaning we cap the dosage. So on the small cans, there's 2.5 milligrams. On the big cans, there's 5 milligrams. And then it's nano emulsified, the actives. And what that means is the particles have got made so small through acoustic technology. They've been made so small that they absorb within minutes from your mouth, your cheeks, your throat, your lining and your body. And so you get the feeling sooner than later, and it's a capped experience. So it's a small dosage. And it's much more clear and flowy. So you don't get that heavy feeling from an edible, but you also don't get that super spiked up, super high feeling. It's comparable to the onset of smoking, but it's not so aggressive. And so I'd say and that's kind of what alcohol does. Like alcohol is just a bad drug. Like it's a good everything else. Like the effect curve is great. The communal vibe of it, perfect. Like, all those things that it does are actually really cool things, but it's a shitty substance actually. That's made from rotting vegetable. I mean, like inherently we should know it's bad for us if it comes from death. Like, and it's true. And then it just, that product is so, it can cause such delirious, though it can cause intoxication and deliriousness. And it can lead you to do harmful things where Breeze gives you a lot of that benefit of that camaraderie, that group activity, that feeling good, but it doesn't include feeling bad. It doesn't include the toxic part of it. So,
and importantly, no hangover.
And no hangovers, yeah.
And no hangovers, yeah. So that's my question is, when is he coming to the UK? Because we need to try that shit.
Yeah, dude, for sure. So I'm in Amsterdam right now. I have a meeting with my Dutch buddy, Sander, who's he's one of the head guys at Sensi Seeds. I'm going to talk to him about the laws and getting it over to Amsterdam. I think the easier places to get it to are going to be Amsterdam, Spain, and
Portugal,
Germany. Okay. I was thinking Germany just because Germany is getting more lax on their vibes, on their laws. But here's the thing, dude. America's CBD laws is what makes hemp-derived THC Breeze legal. But every other country's laws on the hemp-derived THC, hemp-derived CBD laws, were based a lot on the American laws. They all are very similar in the fact that you have to have hemp derivative and it has to have below 0.3% THC. So a lot of other countries modeled it all. So what does that mean? The same thing that they wrote into it in America that made this legal is also a lot of other countries, the same thing they wrote into their laws. So my theory is that the UK, Spain, Italy, all over France, who has actually pretty aggressive laws in cannabis. All of these places, I think, are going to have some variety of this type of product in the future. And we're not the only by any means. And there's a lot of amazing products. Like, what makes this category sweet is that it's a category. Like, there shouldn't be one person who runs it. But I do think what we do is different. We mix cannabis and mushrooms together, which creates a different effect. Like, I'm looking to be more craft experience with our beverages versus like commodity access. I think that's what, you know, everyone can sell milk, but and some people sell really fucking awesome milk, but I want to be selling something that is just not, you know, the same.
I love that.
And the outcome should be experience. You know what I mean? Like, how does it feel? Like, and do I enjoy that taste? I think there's a total blue ocean in that area that I think we might be the first to carve into, but there will be many others on the way.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And growth today is primarily kind of digital, right? So like direct to consumer, but you are going. There's like a sprinkling of retail coming as well, right?
Yeah, totally. So our kind of angle. What happens with most brands in this space is they go full distribution because that's the only way to really, and also shipping beverage is not a very easy thing. Yeah, most don't have the margin for it either because it's so heavy and whatnot. But we targeted being the premier product on the market. We wanted to be the high end. And first off, I don't think anyone really wants budget drugs. Like, I think people want to invest in their experiences. And so I want to make sure we could have the budget to do things that matter, but also that we could do D2C. Anyway, long story short on that one is that we're primarily focused on D2C while everyone goes to distribution. But what happens with those guys, they distribute, they get into the stores and then they don't drive sell through. Like that, you can sell once into the store, but if you can't keep selling, then that's the problem. So how do you fix that? Most of them put salespeople in the stores to help move the product in their locations. It makes total sense. It's a great strategy. It can work. But it's not really what my skill set is necessarily. And so instead for us, our angle is if we can build and scale D2C now and make that very effective where we have so much demand and even know where that demand's at, it will give us better negotiation power to speak with distributors in order to make better deals. And then once it is in their store, it will be driving sell through right away. We've already had pent up demand for these products in physical locations. I get people asking me every day, where can I get this in LA? Where can I get this in Denver? Where can I get this in San Francisco? Where can I get this in? And the answer is nowhere right now. Or very few places right now. There's some places in Florida and a few others around New York, but there's not that many. So our plan is the demand will lead to better distribution. And so we're going that angle. Also, because of Lucid, we have unique access that people don't have much access to. That allows us to scale faster in digital. And, you know, it's just building on our strengths, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. And we definitely want to get into Lucid. That's the thing that kind of really interests us as kind of marketers over here. But Breeze, I mean, all you got to do is go on the website and within like 2 seconds of seeing that can spinning around, you're sold. I think the branding job has been fucking brilliant on that one. But I love that strategy of nail it through D2C, like build a bit of that, like the kind of prime aspect, right? Where everyone wants it, they can't get hold of it. And then people start seeing it in the stores and then they sell through. I think that's a winning strategy if ever.
And it's like a fake strategy either where I'm like, I'm trying to keep it from people. Like I fucking wish I could sell it in the UK. I wish I could sell it in Canada. The biggest challenge we have right now is we can't it's that mixture of producing enough before and selling it. So just like, you know, the logistics of it, they're not easy, but we're getting better at it. We got our biggest order coming next, but it's scary to invest a bunch in product, you know, like it's you're like, what's going to happen. So we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. And so, so looking at it through the kind of Lucid angle, right? And you said that that's kind of a nice segue to go into that. So you set up Lucid, is that right? Or is like a co-founder? Or...
I have amazing partners, but I founded it originally. But what built Lucid into what it is today is me and my partners for sure. Aven Klein and Nick Shackelford, previously Calvin was a partner as well, who exited. So I founded both companies, but the partners is what really makes the companies for sure.
Yeah. Me and you. We don't know Nick, but we know of him, as probably most people listen to this one. So with the success that you kind of had, or the way that you built Lucy, was that off of what you learned scaling Monk?
Yeah, very similar actually. It all started with this idea of if we understood policy better than most, then we could probably do things that most couldn't do. For if you're running an advertising agency, it doesn't make much sense to pick a sector that's really tough and put any attention towards it, because like that's keeping you from the opportunity cost of focusing on all your other clients that do everything else that's not so mm-hmm. regulated. That takes a lot of work. So our kind of angle was, this is all we're going to do. We're going to go do that really hard thing that no one wants to do. So that's going to be a competitive advantage, quote unquote. I don't really believe in competition, but it creates a little bit of a moat because no one really wants to do it. It doesn't actually make logical sense for anyone else to do it. And it's super hard to do. And so that created this like trifecta of blue ocean for us if we were willing to take the risk. And it's definitely a more risky path in many ways. There's a duality to all of it. Like that was the great aspect of it, is we had a blue ocean and we figured things out that other people didn't have. And that allowed us to scale aggressively in a space and have a lot of dominance in a space that other people just didn't have. And we brought good strategies, and we do bring good strategies to this day. To make that lane for ourselves. But you know, there's challenges. It's a regulated space. There's policies that change. There's strategies that work that stop working, and new strategies that come to be. And there's a lot of innovation required. Agency, you guys know, it's a people business. It's a what have you done for me lately business. So it's challenging, but I wouldn't change it for the world. And like what we love doing is like you can advertise anything, but like with Lucid, between me, Aven, and Nick and Calvin, all these guys, like we see it as we're in the business of reducing human suffering and maximizing human potential by helping distribute these what we call conscious compounds, therapeutic compounds that lead to a net positive return. So like good for you things. And I like if you're going to put millions of dollars in ad spend and optimize how to get people to buy these things and show them creatives and wait, like do it for things that are actually good for them. And you feel really good about it at the end of the day.
I love it. And also the kind of defensibility of that as an agency that focuses there is that when your clients come and they give you the headroom, I'm imagining, because they know that it's difficult and they know that if there's a bad month, they can't necessarily just go to the next agency that's knocking on their door, because you guys are the experts in that field.
It is. It turned out to be, at least for a period of time, we became like drug kingpins in a weird way, for a period of time. So people think like, oh, Meta, Facebook's pay to play. It's not actually, I mean, if anyone's pay to play, it's probably us. But I don't mean it. So, it's not said in the way people think. We charge agency fees that are on the premier side of agency. And like you said, there's not that many options. So you work with us, you can go work someone else, but the chance of spending a lot of time not actually advertising is much higher by working with other people. That's not how it's going to be forever, but it definitely was and is kind of the case today.
That's really interesting. I want to dive into this for as much as you can share. Like what are the tactics or like the ways you could advertise for like a product and like based on like Facebook, for example? Like what have you learned? What can you share without giving too much of your secrets?
No, I don't believe in secrets. I'm told, like, don't tell me any secrets. I'm really bad at it. I'll just tell everybody.
Okay, go for it.
That's the thing. When you talk about defensibility, it's pretty defensible, not because of me not telling people what to do, but I tell people how to do something all day long, but the experience, the know-how, there's just a different thing, you know? When you go wrong in this world, there's actually like pretty significant penalty. Like your ad accounts go down, your business managers go down. Those are inherently challenging things to overcome as well. So it's like, if you do it wrong, now you're in the position where you got to rebuild from the ground up every time that you do it wrong. And so it's kind of so weird defensibility. So how do you do it? So for CBD, there's policy that says that you can educate consumers about CBD and not sell to them. So if you're educating your client, your people about CBD, so example is what does CBD feel like? And giving an explanation of what this product is or how it works. And then that can lead to additional information. And that additional information can be a page like your homepage or elsewise. So we drive to articles or landing pages that are informative that click over to your main site. And then hemp products also work too. So you can do, if you can advertise hemp products, as long as they're hemp, not CBD or THC products. And so there's kind of this gray area. Hemp products are CBD and THC products. And so that's the kind of confusing aspect to it now in the policy land is Meta's saying, yes, you can. And if I had to argue what they're technically saying would be like, I guess maybe non, I mean, they're saying that you can advertise hemp ingestible products, but inherent to hemp is that there's CBD and THC in it to some degree.
Right, yeah.
And so so their policy is that you have to use hemp language or you don't use hemp language. And that clicks over to pages that reflect the same hemp language or they don't say hemp language. You know, Meta really cares only about the first few clicks.
Does it have to be a page from your site or do you have to create a different website for the article that then links to your main site, or is it?
Yeah,
doesn't matter.
It can be either. You can either do it. Either one works. The thing about the main site, though, is there's a lot more metadata embedded in your existing site that you're going to have to filter through in order to make compliant advertising. Versus just doing clean sites, much easier, much cleaner. You know, you have to be able to do that in a way that maintains customer journey to really make it optimal. What's interesting is this is not just like how you advertise. This is probably how you advertise any. Products these days, like this is the and there's complications. You know, there's things like what do you do with a bunch of rejected ads? You can't get overturned. These are challenges you got to figure out. We have proprietary solutions for each of these, also like there's things like domain blocks. How do you solve a domain block? Very challenging. We figured it out, it's very challenging to do so. Those are the things that will prevent people. Unfortunately or fortunate, it's a double-edged sword there. I'm not actually trying to create any monopoly on this type of industry. Like I wish Meta would just open it up fully. Like we're premier partners with Twitter. Twitter has completely opened up their cannabis advertising. So we can do anything, everything on Twitter now. And like that free access, is what makes the world a better place. And so we're actually consider ourselves like more of an activist agency than anything. So there's no real secrets, you know, good positioning, good timing and good experience.
Love that answer. Love that answer. So is your mix for Breeze more leaning more towards Twitter at the moment, or you're managing to use the tactic you just mentioned on Facebook too?
Most of it's Meta today. I will run Twitter. Twitter D2C advertising is expensive, at least it was in the past. I think that's how it is today. We do some for a handful of brands now, but like, you know, even my partners at Twitter, they would say like, or X now, I guess, they would say like $15,000 a month in spend is probably like the threshold you want to be at before you're like, can really give it the platform enough data to work with. You know, like, Facebook has a lot of history of AI that people don't talk about enough. Like they've been in this game since 2006 or some shit. It's not just the access that they have to people and the scalability they have to people. It's also their development of AI. And like what's even crazier is their AI does two things: hold attention better. Like that's like, or hold attention better and sell products better on their ads platform. That's it. So it's not just AI development like Google might have. It's AI development to make advertising more profitable. I don't think that lasts. I think that the game changes. I think X becomes a different platform. The advertising on X is going to be an entirely different type of advertising, and more conversational, more communal. And I think Elon has a good vision of what he's trying to do here. That's going to shift how advertisers, the current ad ecosystem just can't work in the long term. It's not a good system. It's bad for humans. It's bad for society. It can be good for marketers. And the idea is that we get algorithms that can show people more and more of what they want. But how soon are they really being shown more and more of what they want versus being influenced into what they do, into what they want? There's two ways to predict what people do. You either control what they do or you predict it. And ultimately, predicting it turns into controlling it.
One leads to the other. Like that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like Twitter has always been, it's never really nailed its advertising offering. It's from the early days when, you know, you and I were back in the early days of the Facebook Ads API, and then Twitter came out and they just, it kind of copied like for like what you could do on Facebook, and it's never really worked. So I definitely agree with you. I feel like once someone comes in there and their focus is like, what is Twitter's unique or X's unique advertising proposition, I think that's when it's going to fly. Hey guys, we're actually doing something a bit different with this week's episode. We're going to split it in two rather than release it in one chunk. We're going to see if that makes it a bit more enjoyable for people that can't commit to listening to the full hour. And also from our stats, we can see our average listen time is around the 40-50 minute mark. So if we can cut our episodes down to be a bit closer to that, that means our kind of completion rate will be higher. That will help us in the rankings and boost our score in the algorithm. So hopefully it's not too annoying for you. If it is and you hate it, just let us know on LinkedIn. Otherwise, you can catch the second part of our chat with Aaron very soon, and we'll see you in the next episode.